This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Almost 1 in 10 New Hampshire kids is diagnosed with some type of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, putting the Granite State at about the middle of the pack nationally. But those numbers are expected to rise, as New Hampshire recently has shown a particular predilection toward labeling kids with ADHD. And this has once again raised an ongoing conversation here about what this disorder is and what it isn't, about whether too many children are diagnosed, and if among some demographic groups they're underdiagnosed, and especially about the role of ADHD drugs, whether kids are being over-medicated or not. Also, there's an emerging concern about abuse of these medicines, as some students view them as convenient study drugs that'll help them score well on that test. Today in The Exchange, the rise in attention deficit hyperactivity disorder diagnoses, why we're seeing this jump and what it means, and let's hear from you. Why do you think more children are being labeled ADHD? How do you view this increase? And if you have experience with this issue in your own family or your line of work, what's your take on this? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests for the hour. Joining us from Durham is Barbara Prudham White. She's an occupational therapy professor and developmental psychologist at UNH with research interests in stress, stimulant medication, and disorders of attention. And Barbara, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Lori Ferris, associate director at the Hunter School, a nonprofit residential and day school in Rumney for children with ADHD, Asperger's syndrome, and related conditions. And Lori, nice to meet you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me as well.
Also with us, ADHD coach Karen Duffy. She's a coach at Additional Resources in Dover. She's the mother of a young adult with ADHD. She's also a certified parent-to-parent trainer for CHAD, a national ADHD support center. And Karen, thank you also for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and I'll start with you, I think, Barbara. The Centers for Disease Control put out some numbers this spring showing a significant increase in kids, especially boys, being diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Nearly 1 in 5 high school age boys, for example. What do you make of this, Barbara?
Well, you know, it's certainly a complicated issue going on in the country, and it has been for some time, but I think there are a number of different things probably at play. One is that there's a lot of stress and pressure on kids for academics, and some of the behaviors of stress mimic attention deficit disorder. I think, two, there's an erratic diagnostic procedure across the country. Some people just ask questions. Some people just, take a short view of an individual, and some really follow through a full, appropriate, multifaceted assessment as they should. But we're all over the map on that, and we're also all over the map in terms of expectations of kids' behaviors, what we expect of kids at different ages. Another one is many kids have poor sleeping and eating habits, and poor sleep patterns, poor eating habits can certainly contribute to the kinds of fidgetiness that we see. The school environments are pretty cookie-cutter in terms of what their expectations are from kids in different age groups. And then I think there also may be some legitimate diagnosing as people become more aware of what some of the symptoms are. So I think we're all over the place in terms of why we see an increase.
Wow, a whole host of issues. And we'll definitely get into that this hour, especially how you diagnose ADHD. You talked about an erratic procedure there. Karen Duffy, to you too, what do these numbers bring up for you? As I said, you're a mom, including one of your children has ADHD.
Mm-hmm. My non-medical opinion is that we're getting smarter as society in recognizing the characteristics and the traits that come with ADHD, and I think parents are looking for guidance in what's happening, and mostly starts, I believe, showing its head in the school setting, even though it can obviously show earlier. So
the rise that we're seeing in diagnoses may have to do with just better awareness, people, mm-hmm. Kind of keying into what's happening.
That's what I think.
Yeah. What do you think, Lori?
I agree with much of particularly what Barbara was saying. I also think at the Hunter School, We have a lot of children that do come in with ADHD, but we actually don't really look at them as having ADHD. One of the things that we find in our culture and our society as a whole is that the access to all of this stimulation, to media, incredible amount of media, constant media, a lot of negativity that these kids are experiencing both in school and in their home environments contributes to these diagnoses. At the Hunter School, we don't really, again, focus much on the labels. We actually consider many of these children to be energetically sensitive. And it's kind of an interesting approach to looking at them, but versus getting hung up on the disorder and the negative facets of ADHD, there are many, many positive traits associated with this as well that we don't always focus on.
So, yeah, and Barbara, I want to hear from you just a sec. So what do you mean, though, when you say, Lori, stimulus and so forth?
Well, electronics, exposure to electronics, not just with children, but also with parents, it's incredibly different than it was 30 or 40 years ago. We're inundated on a daily basis with news and iPods and cell phones and constant barrage of stimulus, commercials. It goes on and on. And that these children, we believe at the Hunter School, that these children are extremely sensitive to energies, thoughts, and consciousness, sort of to what's going on in the world. And as parents, many of us as parents, including myself, as a parent of a son with severe ADHD, have been very affected by what goes on, and hence my family is affected by that as well. We don't always have tools to cope.
So does that mean ADHD is more a product of society? It isn't really an internal medical condition?
My personal belief is that that is true. I think that these children, when put in an appropriate environment, a creative environment where they can really utilize their creative abilities, their intelligence, supported with parents with tools, I don't see it as an issue. I think Barbara made an excellent point about the school systems, many of them, in terms of children really being forced into a box. We don't have all of the creative programming that we used to have. A lot of physical ed is cut out, a lot of specials. You know, these children are forced to sit many times in a classroom for long periods of time, and it's not natural to who we are as human beings.
Yeah, Barbara, what do you think about this? This question that I just asked Lori, is this a medical problem? Is it a societal problem?
Well, I think Lori gave some great perspectives. I think Karen does too, but I do want to underscore that when we think about attention behavior, it's a human attribute like all others, and there's some kind of expectation out there that we all should have the same amount of it, and that's not true of any human attribute. So attention varies by individual. It also varies by context, and it varies by age group. So you've got multifaceted reasons for why people would have varying attention in different places. I think the disorder is supposed to be reserved for those individuals who clearly have problems across all areas, across age group, across place and time, and developmentally as well. In terms of whether it's environment or more of a medical issue, I think there's a lot to think about in terms of the environment. I really do. That a lot of children do much better in environments in which they can have plenty of sleep, routines, yes, good nutrition, and lots of exercise. We do not typically have our children involved in outdoor activities like we used to years back. And kids, especially younger kids, need to have some kind of physical work every day, whether it's in terms of playing games or whether it's around household chores. But if you think back to 100 years ago, people were not sedentary in early childhood. And I think environment and expecting kids to sit still for large portions of the day is counterintuitive, as Lori said, to who we are as humans.
Of course, some of them choose to sit still because they want to play their video games. But we'll talk about that in just a moment.
Right.
And Karen, I want to ask you about this, too, because we're kind of treading on tricky ice here, aren't we? I mean, in a way, there's a little bit of the blame the parent element to this. Oh, your kid isn't active enough. You know, oh, you let him or her use too much technology. I wonder what you think about this idea that ADHD is partly a product of society, of family life, and partly a internal medical issue. It's very tricky.
It's very tricky. All of the above is true. Society right now, no one has to wait for anything. So that does not help these children who tend to be impulsive and very active. Even they have memory issues, and I think of things like when we were kids, we had to remember all of our friends' phone numbers, in kids and young adults society. We don't have to do that anymore. And I think all of these things come together, and the ADHD characteristics, the memory, the impulsivity, the hyperactivity, all these pieces just are blown up by the fact that society doesn't expect us to wait for things anymore, and everything's in the moment, and that doesn't help an ADD-er.
So you've got two kids, you were telling me before. One has ADHD and one doesn't. What are your experiences or thoughts there, Karen? You know, again, we can talk about all these societal forces, but one of your kids doesn't have this problem.
Correct. I think the ADHD piece of it, because some of it is, you know, it's definitely a biological, chemical condition. Society just, you know, it surroundings can make it worse or better. And I think in our case, as a family, we didn't know what was going on until my daughter was 10 or 11.
Wow.
And, you know, a lot of it's unawareness on the parents' part and the ADDers' part. They're not aware of what's going on and don't pick up things that a kid without ADD can pick up executive function issues, meaning daily routines, things like that. A non-ADDer just automatically picks that up from surroundings, where an ADDer who's not quote unquote paying attention doesn't pick it up. So it's a whole different ball game bringing up a child like that.
Yeah, it's hard for children to express what's going on sometimes. They have no idea, and so they just act out, and then you just think, you know, they're being little pests. You don't think that they have a real problem. We have so much more. You know what, Barbara? Hang on, okay? Because we have to go to a short break, and then lots more to untangle, a lot more to untangle with this topic for sure. And I know we'll want to hear from a lot of listeners as well. So you can join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Lots more to talk about when we come back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. You only have until this Saturday at noon for the early bird drawing for NHPR's car raffle, so don't miss out on your chance to win $2,000 of gas gift cards from Irving Oil, and you'll be helping support NHPR at the same time. Go to NHPR.org to buy your raffle tickets, or you can call 1-888-805-NHPR. Becoming partly sunny today, there is a slight chance of some showers, especially in the North Country. Highs lower 70s from the mountains north, upper 70s, mid-80s for the rest of the state. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from New Hampshire's community colleges, now accepting registration for the fall semester. Information and links at ccsnh.edu. And the Monshire Museum, Norwich, Vermont, featuring engaging exhibits indoors and out, including 2-acre science park with water features, open 7 days a week. Information and events at monshire.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the increase in ADHD diagnoses, both nationally and especially in the Granite State. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. If you have personal experience with attention deficit hyperactivity disorders in your own family, in your own work, what are your thoughts on why the number of kids diagnosed with these disorders keeps rising? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Barbara Prudhomme-White at UNH, just before the break, you were wanting to jump in on what Karen Duffy was saying about societal factors that may trigger ADHD, if I could put it that way.
Yes, and actually I wanted to just chime in quickly and make a quick point about the biochemistry issue here. While there's some hints and some some really interesting research being done in these areas. We have no clear evidence in this country that there is anything physical or chemical, biochemical, that is reliably diagnostic here. And we have some possibilities, but let's just think carefully about who's doing the research. So some of the EEG stuff that's coming out is really interesting. It's fascinating, but most of that research has been done by the manufacturer of the devices. And
EEG is
really
like brain scans brains to see if there's a difference between an ADD brain and a non-ADD brain.
And they have some stuff emerging from typical group comparisons, but probably not sufficient enough. So, you know, I'm not saying that it may not be true, but we are still in an emerging period with that, because we need to have better objective evidence and more clinical comparisons with people who do not have any diagnostic or problems. And the same thing happens with biochemistry in terms of how kids respond to medications, et cetera. A lot of that's been supported by the pharmaceutical companies and or not enough sufficient control groups. And a lot of those kinds of medications that they use to support that there might be a biochemical imbalance, those medications also work on typical brains in the same way. So a stimulant is a stimulant regardless of whether you have a diagnosis or not. So
Barbara,
you know,
what are you saying? Are you saying there's no way to tell through brain waves? There's no way to tell through biochemistry? How do you tell if someone has ADHD?
This has been and still remains a clinical diagnosis based on multiple sources of behavioral observations. So a child who across multiple venues and environments has these issues and problems that are now laid out in the DSM-5, just a little bit differently than they were in DSM-4. But
DSM is Diagnostic Statistical Manual,
correct,
right?
Yeah. Correct. And again, not to say that there are no biochemical potentials here, but there's nothing that's consistently reliable that we could go to the bank or to Las Vegas on and say this is a clear indication. This is still, and it remains, a behavioral clustering that people have observed over time and have put into packages of 9 distinct behaviors, and you need to have 6 of them if you're a child to be diagnosed in either one of the categories, or for an adult about 5 of them.
So what does that mean, Barbara? Does that mean that are you questioning this as a real diagnosis because there isn't a sort of hardcore way to diagnose it?
Well, I think we know that the behavioral clusters exist. So I'm not saying that the diagnosis isn't real. I think that it's real for those individuals who pass the bar, the very high bar that psychologists and psychiatrists and behavioral pediatricians have set to meet that bar, and that we are lax and not always consistent about how we make those diagnoses. And so for other individuals, they may be questionable. They've been getting a diagnosis too easily. But just because you base something on behavior doesn't mean that it's not real. We know that, for example, bipolar disorder has a lot of behavioral features that were, you know, well diagnosed and seen before anything might have come out in terms of neurochemistry. So behavioral observations are credible. They just, you know, you need to follow the guidelines carefully, and you need to really pay attention to what's been laid out there.
What do you think about this, Lori Ferris, about the diagnosis and Barbara's concern that we're not always consistent or thorough when it comes to making these diagnoses?
I agree with what Barbara is saying. I think that, again, our systems aren't necessarily set up for individuals who maybe learn differently, process information differently. And again, just the word attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, there are, you know, I can't say how many disorders that are all negative connotations, and having a lot of energy and being really observant and seeing everything. These can be very positive traits if utilized in an appropriate context.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you have struggled with this issue yourself, not only as a professional at the Hunter School, but as a mom.
Yes. I have a son, he's now 13, who was diagnosed with very severe ADHD at about 4 years old. And we did the entire traditional path with medication and a one-on-one aide in school and all kinds of evaluations. And I read every book on the planet how to help him. And he struggled and got worse in our particular situation.
Even with the medications?
The medications for us were a nightmare. And what I find, even working at the school sometimes, is a lot of doctors are even straying from your typical ADHD meds and are sometimes going into heavier classes of medication that are prescribed, you know, off-label for some of these children to control the level of energy and activity. And after a long path with my son, who is now 13, he's doing fantastic. He's been off of meds for 4 years, and we utilized some alternative approaches with energetic mindfulness, basically teaching him to be in control of his body and his thoughts and to self-regulate and to choose to empower positive thoughts in his mind versus all the chaos that was really going on.
Right, and that's a lot of work, not as easy as taking a pill, ultimately more successful.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't even think that it was, when I say that much work, it was a learning process. But I'll go back to the parent issue, and I think that, not to blame parents, but there was a lot that I needed to learn, even as an educated mother and a professional, as to how I could better help Zach.
All right, well, lots of people who want to jump into our conversation. So let's invite them now to join us with a phone call at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And waiting in Fremont is Fran. Hi, Fran. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I've been waiting for this conversation for a very long time. My children are in their 40s. And I just found out recently that one has Asperger's and the other one is just autistic. And they were put on all kinds of silly medications. My daughter was, she's the one who's just autistic. She would have what they called fifty-mile seizures and put her on medication for, what's that called?
I don't know, but Fran, we're talking about ADHD today. Did they also have that?
Yes. That's what my son was diagnosed, like your guest, at 4, with extreme hyperactivity disorder. He spent 3 of his 5 first years in time out in a closet.
Wow.
Because he was so disruptive. He would get so angry. One time he pulled his door and door frame off of the wall at 4.5. I mean, it was extreme. And I decided to take him to CrossFit Mountain where his diagnosis was made, and they told me I could either put him on Ritalin, which at that time was experimental, or put him on the Feingold diet. Now, I don't know if your guest has tried Feingold, but it is a really wonderful way to treat a child with hyperactivity disorder, and it worked very well for mine. He's the only one in my family. I have 4 nephews that are all hyperactive. And they were on medication, and they're still off the wall. While my son is able to be married with a family, his youngest just graduated from high school. He's been able to hold a job.
Well, Fran, that's great, and we should talk about that. And I wonder if anybody here, maybe you, Barbara, the role of diet in ADHD.
Oh, you know, I think that there is some evidence that for some individuals it really helps. But I think, by and large, most of the stuff I've read is anecdotal. It's not been done in systematic, larger scale research. It's more expensive and it's difficult to run that kind of thing. And I don't know that that's the best approach either, because some of those things may be more individualized. Some people may have gluten insensitivities or something of that sort that might also exacerbate some of their behavior. And, you know, I think that any of these that are generally healthy, non-invasive, they're worth a try. They may or may not work for your child, but I think that it's not something that is harmful in any way, and in some ways it really models a good, healthy diet. So why not try it?
All right. Well, Fran, thanks for calling, and good to hear a positive story. The number 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. Kevin is calling in from Bedford. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura. I'm a longtime listener, and I call periodically. I have a son who just turned 30. ADHD, and when he was 3, at the urging of my wife, she kept saying there's something wrong with this baby, and we just stopped with Manchester and Bedford Pediatrics. We went to Boston, and the head of Boston Children's Hospital said it was the third most hyperactive 3-year-old he'd ever met.
Wow.
My son was climbing up the back wall. He was looking at the stethoscope. But, you know, fast forward, he just went to work for a major airline. It's a great job. You know, he has had some loser jobs. He's done some loser things. But through the years, we were never satisfied. Someone just said diet. We tried all the diets. We didn't do gluten-free at the time. It wasn't the thing to do. But once it didn't work, we moved on. But the testing in Boston was key because we could go to school. He didn't have to have special attention to school. Just don't give him coloring when he was in third grade. Don't give him a cutting or taping or gluing because that frustrated him. Give him bigger motor skill things. Mm-hmm. In fifth grade, he was made the disc doctor. He would go around and work on all the apples. And today, he's very, very good at computers.
So what's the message, Kevin, from you for others? And what are your thoughts on this rise in diagnoses that we keep seeing in New Hampshire and New England?
Yeah, I can't comment on the rise. Sometimes I think it's a catch-all.
Mm-hmm.
Although I've been to the CHAD meetings, I've been to ADH meetings. And I'll tell you, 8 out of 10 of the kids that I've spent 20-some-odd years with are really, really brilliant. And what you have to do is find the thing that works. Unfortunately, it's very individual when it comes down to what really motivates them and what demotivates. Because there are things that just takes them out of the game. They don't want to play once you get them in that arena. So don't give up. And as parents, you know, I have an electrical engineering background, mechanical. My wife's a teacher by trade. You know, we were like, we see how smart this kid can be, so let's accentuate that. When he talks out in school or at church or whatever, you know, it was more of the, you know, stop, think, act.
All right, but Kevin, thanks a lot for calling in. Yeah.
Mark, can I just chime in? Just
I want to hear from Karen on this too. So, Karen, why don't you go first? Yeah. This idea, don't give up, and accentuate the positive.
Absolutely. The positive is a huge motivator, and my opinion, when I do parent training classes and I do teacher workshops and paraprofessional workshops and things like that, how I start out is really the most important thing that these, well, at the time I'm talking about children and students, need is one person to believe in them. And the high IQ is very, very common with, you know, at least in my 3-year experience coaching, the high IQ is very common. And the problem is there's a disconnect because they struggle in school. So, the self-esteem is what takes the hit there. And parents and teachers and paraprofessionals can make such a difference in these kids' lives. Just one person to believe in them and support them in who they are, and not because they can't necessarily sit still for 6 hours a day.
Well, Kevin, thanks for that call. And here's an email that came in from Lori, who says, I was born in 1936 when spare the rod and spoil the child was the law of the land, so to speak. Today, and for some decades past, parents do not understand their responsibility to require civilized behavior from their children. Tragic, says Lori. Now, this is another take on this issue, and I wonder what all of you think. Barbara, what do you think first? Parents just need to be stricter. That's what Lori's saying.
Well, again, I that seems like a linear approach to something that's rather complex. I go back to Karen and to Kevin, the first caller here, or the second caller. It's excellent points. Play to the strengths. And really think of this more as an affordance. I tell some of my students who deal with these issues that if they can reframe themselves as having an attentional behavior affordance, thinking about how they can use these gifts that they have for their benefit and not feel sacked with some kind of disorder that gives them a sense of no agency, if they can reframe that and turn it around and make it work for them, then they are in a much better place.
I wonder what you think about that too, Lori.
I completely agree with that. I think with the children that we work with at the Hunter School, for example, the issue of focus, many of these kids with ADHD are told at a young age, you know, they can't focus, they can't sit still, they can't self-regulate, and they start to believe those thoughts that are being imparted. But you'll find with a lot of kids with ADHD, if it's a topic that they're engaged in, they can hyper-focus. So it's not a matter of not being able to focus. It's a matter, in my opinion, of learning and having some tools to be able to self-regulate and be in their centers so that they can access information both academically and even in the home.
What about Lori's email? What do you think, Lori? Spare the rod and spoil the child, that, you know, a generation or two ago, you did what your parents and teachers said, and if not, you got whacked. And lo and behold, we didn't have large numbers of kids with ADHD.
I think there's a tad of truth in that. I'll be honest. As a parent raising a child, it's very difficult unless you're standing in someone else's shoes to understand what it's really like to raise a child like this, particularly with severe ADHD. But I will tell you that these children are extremely bright, and I will use the word a little bit manipulative, because I think parents get worn down. And at some point, you sort of give in to the issues that aren't maybe as important if they're not a safety issue. And the children, what starts out as very impulsive, hyperactive behavior can become learned behavior in the home. And as a parent, you need tools to be able to shift that.
Well, and thanks for that email, Lori. And here's another one from Mark, who says, our daughter was diagnosed with ADHD after graduating from college. We, as parents, were not aware of her struggles in school. She got decent grades in high school, just enough grades in college. She's been on medication for a couple of years, and her quality of life has improved. She is now in grad school getting A's. Mark says she obviously did well with her life, but now is doing even better and is very happy. I don't think ADHD is only on the extremes. Mark, thanks for that call. So, Karen, here's somebody who's now on medication as a young adult and is doing really well. So what do you think?
Well, congratulations to her for completing her college degree. First of all, parent training from CHAD teaches that only 25% of ADDers earn four-year degrees.
Really?
So kudos to her for not even realizing she had ADHD, although she probably had some ideas. Medication works for some people, and it helps, but it's not the only solution. It can just help with certain characteristics, and the biggest thing she can do is have faith in herself and focus on the things that, you know, make her feel good and that she's interested in.
All right, and I want to talk about the medication in just a minute. Barbara, I wonder what you think also of this email.
Well, I can say from the research that I've done at the university more recently is that she's a rarity. Most students struggle with this and, in fact, don't like the medications, in part because it gets muddled in terms of their own self-efficacy. Who is able to produce the results, the person or the drug and the person? So they start to feel questionable about that. And then secondly, long-term use of these meds carries some side effects in terms of decreased appetite and some other kinds of dampening of the highs and the lows for many of them. So she sounds like she's having a successful response to medication, but again, that's not typical what we've been hearing from students who are taking these long term.
All right, more after a short break, and we'll keep taking your calls, so stay with us.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
$2,000 in Irving Oil Gas gift cards is just the early bird prize in NHPR Summer Car Raffle. Our grand prize winner gets $25,000 towards a new car from one of Grapponi Automotive Group's dealerships. Ford, Honda, Toyota, Scion, Mazda, or Hyundai. Getting in on the raffle is as easy as buying a $50 ticket or getting three for $100 at 1-888-805-NHPR or visit nhpr.org. View complete rules online.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Dartmouth Hitchcock Primary Care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health, 13 locations statewide. More information at d-hdocs.org. And Vineyard Brands, importers of Kono Sur Pinot Noir, made from sustainably farmed cool climate Chilean vineyards, on the web at konosur.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, early voting and vote by mail are taking off elsewhere. What about New Hampshire? Email us your thoughts on that before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder diagnoses on the rise nationwide and especially here in New England and New Hampshire. Join us with your thoughts, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And before we go back to our listeners, Lori Ferris with the Hunter School, I wanted to get your thoughts, too, on the role of medication. We had an email from Mark earlier who said his daughter finally went on medication as a young adult and is doing very, very well. What are your thoughts about the appropriate use of medication in these cases of ADHD and the inappropriate use?
Well, at the Hunter School, the children are very young. We service children from kindergarten through eighth grade. And I absolutely have some concerns, both professionally and also personally, about the frequency in which certain medications are prescribed for these youngsters, the lack of really proper documentation and follow-through, not only with behavioral improvements, but also with the medical care, because as Barbara mentioned, some of these drugs raise blood sugar. They can do damage to your liver. There's not a lot known about many of these drugs as to how they affect particularly young children.
Because so your brain is still developing.
Your brain is still developing, and there's so many factors here. I think, you know, at the school where I work at Hunter, we do attempt to eliminate and lessen the use of medications, but we're able to do it also in a very supportive environment. You have a therapeutic supportive environment with behavioral interventions that are provided. So I'm not a huge fan of medications, particularly with really young children.
Yeah, and to you real quickly, Karen, too, not only your own experience, but you're also a parent-to-parent trainer. How do you talk to other parents about whether they should make that big decision about medicine or not?
Well, Chad is very hands-off when it comes to talking about that. Part of the parent training does address medication, but huge disclaimer. First of all, I'm not a medical person in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, the information is what it is, and we talk about that. Some of the information is a few years old.
Information on how it affects the developing brain?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, those kind of things. And just what kind of medications are available these days. You know, it changes quickly. But I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. There's a lot there. And I wonder, too, Barbara, before the break, you talked about that. But give us a little bit more on this idea that, you know, it's a tough one to wade through, isn't it, whether to medicate or not?
It is, and, you know, gosh, when you start talking about medications, you talk about, again, it is a stimulant, and it works for all brains, regardless of what characteristics those brains may have. So it's across the board, increases attention for the short term. Long-term effects of medications for sustained academics and such is kind of, it's a little bit mixed bag out there. There's some evidence to suggest that for some kids it might be helpful, but for others not so much. And so there are some prices to pay for taking medications like this with a developing brain. I agree so wholeheartedly with Lori. We really don't know what the long-term effects of that are. And then there's the whole, self-efficacy piece. If children believe that they are only so productive as the medications that they take, we send a big message in terms of what we, how we move forward in our lives and expectations as adults, right? It's really tricky. And we also know that there's diversion. There's a certain group of individuals who get the diagnosis, get the medication, and then sell the medication off to others who don't.
Yeah, drugs.
we run about 15% in our recent research of the sample that we have here, so about 130, 150 kids out of 1,000 who are who don't have scripts but get it from somebody else who does. And so the implication there is that some people are getting the scripts and not taking them as they are prescribed, and sometimes they'll take them in bolus fashion, which means that they'll just take them as a snort or as a massive swallow for preparation for an exam, for example, and they won't take them as prescribed throughout the week. And that carries, of course, health risks with it.
Right, because you're going up and down instead of doing it the way that
exactly.
You were told to do.
And then we know moms take it. Their children, you know, some moms at home take the medication. We see it on the news reports. I haven't done that particular research myself, but certainly 2020 has. And, you know, we have, there's a certain amount of diversion that's going on there. And then there are always the illegal sales of the prescription as well. So this is a drug that is abused as well as taken legitimately.
Yeah, New York Times did a really terrifying piece on students at high-performing high schools. The kids want to do well on the SATs. They want to get into the Ivy Leagues. And as one student was quoted as saying, right before the test, everyone went out to snort their Addies, meaning Adderall. And I know you want to jump in, Karen Duffy, and then we'll go back to our callers.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly say that parents, in the 3 years I've been, you know, had my private practice, I have not had one parent come in and say, I want to medicate my child. It's just not a thing that parents want to do. Having said that, it is a personal decision for each family, and it can be very helpful. It can be, you feel like it's a big experimental process, which is not a nice feeling. But I just wanted to say that
parents aren't jumping to do this eagerly. Let's not go overboard on that impression. Is that what you're saying,
Karen? Well, they're not eager to medicate their child ever, but it's
at least the ones that are coming to see you, which
was
applaudable, but that is also a subsample.
Correct. That makes sense. Yep.
All right. Back to our listeners. Lots of people who want to jump in on this. And Steve is joining us from Nottingham. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Thanks. A number of points. Number one, I agree with everyone, especially your opening remark. It is both overdiagnosed and underdiagnosed. As a psychiatrist, I've seen where when the right diagnosis has been made, it has been absolutely, as some of the callers have pointed out, has made the kids' lives better. And I want to also point out that the diagnosis should be made in two settings, at home and at school, not just at the school setting. Number three is that there is some scientific evidence for some of these medications, because it seems ridiculous to give stimulants to people who are already hyperactive. But it turns out certain parts of the brain, when you do PET scans, positive emission tomography, are underperfused. The next point is that it is a lifelong disease, and be prepared for it, that it is abused, and I know certain college students sell it. And there's a great book I want to recommend called Born to Distraction, written by two psychiatrists who both have ADHD.
Wow. Okay. So, and again, some encouraging thoughts there. I think, Lori, that, you know, this isn't a death sentence. You know, there is, as you have talked about, a certain intellect and creativity that goes along with this.
Absolutely. And there are many, many successful people in the world that have had ADHD and have utilized their creative abilities and their intelligence to do wonderful things. So I think it's a positive.
Here's an email that came in from Jean, a teacher's perspective. Jean says, as an elementary school teacher from the early 60s until the 90s, I've observed the whole range of child behavior. Less than half dozen of the children with whom I've worked have displayed behaviors that would be described as ADHD. Others could be helped by treating them as individuals with appropriate work assignments and setting, something that you have talked about, Lori. But Jean says, we need to realize that a teacher is dealing with not just one, but many children at one time. Do you know any doctors who would treat 20 plus patients at a time, or lawyer who sits with 20 clients simultaneously? Jean, thanks for that perspective. And again, you work at a school. Lori, what do you think?
I think that's an excellent perspective. And for kids with ADHD, we find that experiential learning is really, really important, actively engaging them.
And schools are doing more of that.
More and more of that.
More shifting around, more up and around.
Absolutely. That's a real key. And involving them in their education with choices, and you'll find that the interactions are going to be much more positive and kids will be much more engaged.
You know, Barbara, we've talked a lot about, you know, the fear that people are overdiagnosed or overmedicated. I've also read, though, Barbara, that there's some concern on the other end that some groups of people are underdiagnosed and that could be really helped by medications, but they're not getting them. Girls come to mind. They don't tend to act out as much. They don't get diagnosed as much. And also certain racial and economic groups are said to be underdiagnosed. What have you heard about there?
Well, I think that's a perspective. When you say that they have been underdiagnosed, that's coming in with a perspective immediately. And I think that in the cases of or most recent research on racial differences is that there seems to be, at least on the interpretation by the researchers, a reluctance to jump to diagnostic because of ADHD because of the liability that some of these parents think it will carry for the long term, and also the possibility that their child might be medicated. So it's not that they're dismissing, they are questioning. And then
in this particular study that came out, I don't really know what the diagnostic procedures were, and they're critical. As our psychiatrist was saying, they need to be multi-located. They need to be across environments. They also need to take into account different perspectives from multiple people and clear observations of the child. So, you know, the idea that it's being underrepresented in certain populations is a tough one for me to get my head around, because I don't know how they were diagnosing and on what basis they're making those claims, and if it's more a matter of parents just being very cautious in certain groups. So according to the researchers, the one that was looking at kids of color being less likely to be diagnosed, the researchers were saying and implying that they thought the parents were being very cautious because they were afraid of what the long-term implications of that diagnosis might mean for their children.
So you're saying that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. I think there are some long-term implications of this, and to carry it when it's appropriate is appropriate. But otherwise, to just carry it and to have that diagnosis placed without the right proper kinds of assessment protocols is potentially dangerous. And again, I worry most about this, the self-efficacy of the individual and the self-perspective of the individual, as much as I think about the systems and the school systems themselves.
I
think I worry
about
the kids.
Self-efficacy of the individual.
Again, you know, if you question whether your ability to do something is based on your true attributes and abilities, or whether it's just because you're taking an enhanced drug, that plays with your self-efficacy. That plays with your
self-image.
Your self-image as an individual, and students. I have seen a number of students struggle with that and question.
Let's take another call, and this is Diane waiting in Exeter. Hi, Diane. Welcome to the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, we've talked a lot, it seems like, this morning about medications that are stimulants. I have a 7-year-old son. He is diagnosed ADHD, and he's taking a medication called Tenex. Another name for it is guanfacine or Intuniv. It's a non-stimulant, and we have had some success with it, and I'm just wondering what your guests today think about this particular medication.
And when you say had success, Diane, just what does that mean real quick?
Well, reports from school are that he does have more focus, and he is less, you know, fidgety in his chair, and not as disruptive and talking to other children. So we did try the stimulants. However, they had terrible side effects for him. So we you know, discontinued that. But
yeah, and how do you feel about him at home? Does he seem still like himself?
Yeah, but we noticed a big difference. He's much more calm, and he can spend longer periods of time focusing on different things.
Okay, so there's a story about a different type of drug. I don't know if anybody wants to comment on that. Barbara?
What's the name of it? I don't know that I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, she said it was a non-stimulant type of drug. Diane, are you still there?
Yeah, it's called Tenex, or another brand name is Intuniv. One is faster release, one is slower release. And
I've heard of Intuniv.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And it was originally prescribed for actually adults with hypertensive disorder. But
hypertension,
they
meaning high blood pressure?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so, and this gets a little bit to what you talked about earlier, Barbara, right? Using some drugs that were meant for other things being used on kids for ADHD.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I think actually Lori might have mentioned that, but I agree 100% is that they're... Oh, it's tricky, isn't it, when you start thinking about looking at other medications and trying to control behavior through them, through what you might have available in an arsenal. And so I think there is a sense of shopping around for different medications to, I would say, and use the word not to be pejorative, control behavior. And then I get back to, is it an issue of the behavior or of the environment? And as Lori was talking about, and I think Karen as well, that environments matter here. And if you are an individual who has mostly symptoms within certain environments, I'm less inclined to think a medication is good for that and more inclined to think that we should look at changing the environment.
Go ahead, Lori. Jump in there.
Well, in response to this particular situation, I think it's great that this child is doing better. It's so individual. I mean, that's what it really, really comes down to. And there are a whole class of other medications that I was bringing up earlier that we're at least seeing at the Hunter School that are not stimulants. And even in my own personal experience at one point with my son, when he was only about 6 or 7, the doctors were looking at prescribing a drug that was for narcolepsy in adults. And because my son could not have stimulants because he had some tics and some other issues. So it's very, very individual, but I just think we have to use such extreme, you know, really extreme caution. And I totally agree with Karen about nobody wants to medicate their child. And but at times, there's also a lot of pressure sometimes from school districts, and I've dealt with that a lot because they're not able to maybe handle the child in the academic situation. And I know we experienced that when my son was younger. At one point, we had a one-on-one. You had all this, you know, supports in place, but ultimately his behaviors and his energy were just off the top, and we were really being pushed. And just like many parents, when he was finally 6, we did succumb to it and then went on a, you know, pretty wild ride before we were finally able to get him off of everything.
Wow. And yeah. I'm guessing you're pretty happy that he's quote unquote off of everything, given some of the concerns that
I
you
am
raised.
Thrilled. And I can also say that children do, there's improvement with age as well in being able to get control over some of these behaviors.
Yeah. Well, and final thoughts from you, I think, Karen, on sort of the way out of this. I mean, the way forward, we've seen this increase in diagnoses. What do you think we're going to see in the years ahead?
Hopefully that society accepts ADDers for the out-of-the-box thinkers that they are, and I believe that our society is headed that way anyways. The creative, nonlinear thinkers are up and coming, and that's what society will need. So that's a positive.
Well, and probably a lot more to talk about in a future program, but I want to thank all of you very much for coming in. Karen, it was nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Karen Duffy, ADHD coach at Reditional Resources in Dover and a certified parent-to-parent trainer for CHAD, a National ADHD Support Center. Lori Ferris, good to meet you too. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Lori Ferris, Associate Director at the Hunter School, a nonprofit residential and day school in Rumney for children with ADHD. And Barbara Prudhomme-White, it was great to have you. Thank you also for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. It was nice to meet our guests as well.
Barbara Prudhomme-White, she's an occupational therapy professor and developmental psychologist at UNH. The Exchange is a production of NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program,
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 o'clock. A news update is next from NPR and from Concord. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from the New Hampshire Orthopedic Center, keeping bodies in motion on the web at nhoc.com. And Plymouth State University, hosting an information session August 7th in Concord to provide information on the university's graduate degree offerings, plymouth.edu/graduate. This is NHPR.
Good morning.
Smoking cessation programs to weight loss challenges, the workplace is increasingly becoming a place for wellness. The efforts aim to keep insurance costs down as Americans struggle with chronic disease, and also